is what it is, bro. I just don't like speaking about what people are saying about me and fights, and you can't make everyone happy, innit? You can't make everyone happy.
Fury was front row today. Tyson Fury was front row today. Applauding, from what I was told. I didn't see him, but he was applauding your win. I spoke to him after, and he said he expected you to do that tonight. I mean, did you catch a glance at him today, sitting there ringside?
Fuck Tyson Fury.
Okay. You don't want to talk about that, obviously.
I was going to say, you know, I don't like trash talking people, but I heard him say something like, oh, I'm here to do commentary about these two sausages or something like that. Bro, that guy that he fought, is an ex-UFC heavyweight champion. A phenomenal story, someone who's changed his life around, and he's just too disrespectful, so forget anything about him right now.
Hey, and welcome back to the number one podcast in the sport where, on International Women's Day, Anthony Joshua has made us all feminists again. Yeah, we're all back on the Femi bandwagon, and the road to Undisputed continues. And to be honest, there were times when we thought that was well and truly done, and we were destined to see him flattered to the sea for the rest of his career. But you have to give a man his due. When he does what he's supposed to do, but does it impressively, because this wasn't just about Anthony Joshua's career. This was actually about these gimmick fights. This idea that MMA could encroach into the world of boxing, and, you know, for a little while they had hope. Where we need to give Anthony Joshua credit, and I'm going to give the same credit to Jake Paul and have done already, with these really basic MMA guys, they shouldn't last long. And when they get stopped, it should be devastating. In the same way that when boxers have gone into the MMA cage, who was it? It was Ray Mercer. He found out the hard way. That, I mean, he really found out. James Toney found out the hard way. You know, they do that. They let you know that this MMA thing is no joke, and we respect it because we understand that. There's nothing scarier than someone being able to pop your shoulder out or just choke you to death. So we respect that. And we needed to establish that respect back in boxing. And I think what Anthony Joshua did in Riyadh has gone a long way to reestablishing that. So post-fight, everyone's going to be wise and they're going to say, yeah, always thought Joshua had too much for him. You know, there'll be a lot of people who will go back through their tweets, and their tweets were a bit more nervous than they are today. And that's okay, because isn't everyone wise after the event? But let's go back to how things were when the fight was announced. And let's be honest, right? When Fury boxed Ngannou, and we had the situation that we had, like, it was a bit of a farce. And Eddie Hearn was like, you know, Hearn was very disparaging about Ngannou. And all of this was quickly forgotten when they realized there was a lot of money to be made fighting Ngannou, who was very little risk to someone like Anthony Joshua. And so when we saw Fury versus Ngannou, people said, I'd like to see him against Joshua. And this is a problem of listening to boxing fans. They say stupid things and then they tend to happen. And once they realized the money was there for another Ngannou fight, of course Hearn threw his hat in the ring, because it's virtually free money for Joshua. And it means that he can have an extended camp as he prepares to fight bigger and better guys. So you look at that and you go, okay. So we already knew that Ngannou shouldn't be messing with two of the top five heavyweights in the world. So why were people nervous? Why were people trying to say that there's a chance? And this is the problem we have, right? Because modern media spends so much money on media rights and rights acquisitions, they have to turn everything into an event. It's like football. They find the most meaningless statistics to make everything seem significant. It's like the psychological trick that fans allow to be played on them. So I think it was Arsenal, when Arsenal spanked Sheffield United, and yeah, it kind of hurts, the two teams I love the most. But when Arsenal spanked Sheffield United, they came up with these random things, like this is the first time a team has beaten opposition by 5 goals and da da da. And they come up with these stats. So they might come up with a stat that says Mo Salah is the first guy to score 17 goals in a row with his left foot, or something stupid like that, to try and make things feel more significant than they are. And we do that a lot in boxing. So you wheel out the usual people who've taken too many punches to the head, and they'll come out and they'll give you reasons why Ngannou can win. And you think, oh, because they've been in the ring, they can see how Ngannou can win. But behind the scenes, they're telling you Ngannou doesn't stand a chance. There are loads of those guys who are saying this is a 50-50, who are like, pay me the money, I'll fight Ngannou. And they were giving away at least £70 to the guy. So the people in the media are not your friend. They're there to con you into believing that this is more important than it was. But when this fight was announced, I felt the same way. I just said, Joshua's got too much power, too much pedigree, too much experience. He should stop him handily. And I had this debate with everyone. People were trying to tell me about Ngannou's chin. And I said, that's an MMA chin. That's not a boxing chin. And people need to understand the difference. Boxing almost pre-selects you for a chin. And there are exceptions, like guys like Amir Khan, for example, where you say, although Amir Khan, people say Amir Khan's chinny, but go and look at the punches that have put Amir Khan down. They're pretty special shots. They're pretty special shots. So the chin thing, yeah, but you get pre-selected because all you're doing is taking punches to the head. And if you find it hard to take punches to the head, you don't filter up the ladder. You don't filter up those rankings. You just can't, right? So if you took the top 100 boxers and the top 100 MMA guys, the top 100 boxers would likely have better chins than the best MMA chin. I am confident of that because it's a prerequisite. Especially in the heavyweight division, it's a prerequisite that you can take a big man's shot. We hadn't seen that with Ngannou. People say, yeah, but he's taking shots in 4 ounce gloves. When you punch with 4 ounce gloves, you don't punch with full power. You can't. Because, especially in an MMA fight, you need your hands to do other things. So you can't go full power. So when they say, yeah, he's got an MMA chin, yeah, kind of. Yeah, kind of. So at no point did I feel confident that Ngannou stood a chance. You know, there was the what if he can take Joshua's best shot. And then I was like, okay, but then so what? Then what? Nothing. So this was always an easy payday for Anthony Joshua. It could have been a banana skin. It could have been a banana skin, and we'll discuss how it could have been a banana skin later on. But it could have been a banana skin, but it was pretty much nailed on that Joshua would win by stoppage. In my eyes, I just didn't believe Ngannou would ever been hit as hard as Joshua hits people. The thing that did make me nervous was looking at Joshua's recent form, where you're fighting guys like Jermaine Franklin, who, whatever you want to say, Jermaine Franklin might win an English title as a heavyweight if he were British or English. And then you go to Robert Hellenius, who was, I mean, Wilder took his soul. And his soul had probably gone well before that. And people say, oh, but he beat Calvin Ackie, who you're seeing what he's doing now. And then he fought Otto Wallin, a guy who, as much as people hoped he would be good, turned out to be as terrible as Joshua said he was. Before Joshua had any plans to fight Wallin, he said it, I already beat this guy easily when I was a novice. What do you think is going to happen now? So the recent Joshua canon hasn't been, and it's not only him, by the way, so I don't want people to say, oh, you're just picking on Joshua. These top guys now aren't concerned with the young, up-and-coming, hungry prospects. You know, Joshua could have probably fought Hergovich. He hasn't fought Hergovich. Could jump in with Joyce. He hasn't really jumped in with guys who have a point to prove and, you know, have weapons. And I get that, man. Like he's doing smart business at the moment. He only cares about two opponents now. In Joshua's career, maybe three, if we add Wilder in there. But in his career right now, he only really focuses on Fury and Usyk, right? Fury to establish that he's the best of his era, Usyk to right that wrong. And I get that. And maybe they're the only fights he wants to do now. But we haven't seen him against someone who wants what he's got. And maybe we won't. And that's okay, because this is just the way boxing's going. But I said all of that just simply to say, by the time that we get to fight week, those who understand boxing know that this is a foregone conclusion, and the media is doing everything it can to convince people Josh was in jeopardy. But he was never in jeopardy. This was a great opportunity for Joshua and Eddie Hearn to get more leverage with the Saudis. And I think you saw in Fight Week what everyone's trying to do now. So everyone's now heading up to Riyadh with the begging bowl and saying, look, which of my prime assets do you want me to bring? Like, literally, like, we saw it last night, grown men getting dog-walked. Dog-walked. Like, and what's that guy's name? You know that South End dog training guy? It looked a bit like that. It looked like when he takes dogs out on a walk. But not great to see people with their begging bowls out. Like, you're hearing it, right? I think it was Conor Benn said it. Look, if the Saudis want to pay for me to fight Manny Pacquiao, I'll do it. It's like, well, no. No, Conor. Just do the fight. If it's the right fight, do the fight. It doesn't have to be in Saudi. But this is where we've got to, where it's just... Oh, man, we'll come on to that later, but it's kind of depressing. So let's look, right? Like, I like to use this analogy because, well, partly because I genuinely have one, right? So if you have like a tactics whiteboard and you're part of Ngannou's team, what was his trainer's name? Dewey Cooper, the guy that Sean Strickland ripped into, quite rightly too. The guy is vacuous and clueless about boxing, you can tell. Like, if he didn't have someone with the physical gifts of Ngannou, we wouldn't even consider him as a boxing trainer. Yet you saw all of those stupid cameramen, jockeys, whatever, fawning over this guy who, to be honest, I don't think could win an ABA title with anybody. But if I'm in that Ngannou camp, and as soon as that fight's announced, I'm writing a few things on the board. The first thing I'm writing on that board is, we need to make this feel as close to an MMA fight as a boxing bout can get. What does that mean? That means it gets physical. Right? That fight had to be physical. On top of that, you have to deny Joshua punching distance. Like, you know AJ's dangerous when he can let the jab and the right hand go. He's less dangerous and he's less confident when he has to do work on the inside. That doesn't mean that he can't. He's just less confident that way. And these aren't things that will help you win, but they tilt the fight in your favor and they can affect the psychology of what's happening in that ring. So you want to turn it into a physical tussle. You want him to feel your strength. You want him to feel that, unlike boxers, you've got that full upper back, mid back and lower back strength, which means you can put him wherever you want, right? That's what you're really looking to do. Maybe a forearm in there just to make it a bit gnarly. Yeah, make AJ feel, oh, this is serious, right? And then you want to be able to, you know, deny him punch distance, deny him thinking time. Because remember, when AJ's got time to think and have a look, that's when he's most dangerous. Like, when you basically reduce him down to raw instinct, that's when the mistakes happen. And that's what Ngannou was gambling on, is that Joshua makes a mistake. There was nothing else. He wasn't going to outbox him. So he had to take this away from being quite a highly technical, efficient fight, you know, full of nuance, into something more akin to just a barroom brawl. That's what he should have been training for. And to do that, that requires a fair few things. One of them is head movement, right? The ability to be dynamic. And it also requires some spiritual humility to say, Josh is a better boxer than me. So how do I bring him down to my level? And that's what all smart underdogs do. They make it uncomfortable. We see it in every other sport. It gets a bit niggly, a bit gnarly, and then people start fighting with emotion and not, you know, with what they've been trained to do. And then that's when it gets competitive, and that's when these fights get closer. So that's what I would have had on the tactics board. These are the non-negotiables. We make it rough. We make it, you know, there's a lot of physical contact. He feels our strength. Non-negotiable. The other non-negotiable is we deny him time and space. Non-negotiable. Third, we bring it down to where we're comfortable and where he's uncomfortable. And these are all noble ideas, but you've got to have the tools to do it, right? You've got the raw materials in Ngannou, but can you build those tools in time to do that with Anthony Joshua? Because you have to discount the Fury thing, and maybe we'll come on to discuss why the Fury fight was different, but you have to discount that and go, Anthony Joshua is a completely different proposition, a very dangerous proposition. So that's for me, that's the Ngannou tactics board. If I'm in camp with Joshua and we've got the tactics board up, what am I saying? Number one, be serious. Take this fight seriously. Because the gap between fighting the best in the world and fighting the best MMA guy in the world may feel huge, but in real terms, it's not huge, right? You take your eye off the ball and it can catch up to you pretty quickly. So take it seriously. Be prepared to demolish this guy would be my first line. That, you know, I won't even compromise on that. Secondly, control distance and position. Like, I'd have AJ boxing exactly how he wants to, where he's comfortable, and he's got to use his experience to do that. The third thing I'd have on there is he's going to give you openings that you don't, that he doesn't even understand, right? Well, you've got novices in that ring, they don't even know the openings they're giving up. They think everything they're doing is enough, but when you're experienced, you can see those openings. And they'll give you the traditional openings that big guys who have their way in camp will give you. Low left hand, for example. All these things come into hand. So he's going to give you openings. You don't have to rush, but they're there. And when you feel the time is right, you take them. And that's kind of what you want to have on that board. And then the last thing I'd say is, make sure Francis Ngannou understands what an elite heavyweight is. From a speed, power, timing, positioning, defense perspective. Make sure you don't give him a single opening, a sniff, and he should go, this is a lot harder than I thought it would be. That would have been my mindset on either side going into camp, right? And then you just want to see the expression of that in the fight. That's really what you want. But all of that stuff kind of lends itself to AJ. AJ just has to be good. Ngannou has to be good and lucky. One of the things with me was, I think this is one of the first AJ fights where I've been able to have conversations with people who are there with him, who share a ring with him. And so I'm going to come on to the actual fight itself. One of the things I want to give Joshua credit and praise for is he was able to morph into a new character. And there's a theme I've been talking about for a while now, this idea that Joshua always struck me as someone who needs to be in that gym environment. Some boxers are like that. They need to be around other boxers. They need that energy. They feed off that energy and it sort of propels them. And I think with where Joshua is in his career, he's a leader now. And we're seeing this with his relationships with guys like Chris Congo, Jesse Brandon, JBTKV, Fabio Wardley to an extent, and other heavyweights who have passed through over the last few months, where he's become that leader, that sage, experienced heavyweight who's giving advice. And I think that's made for a better Anthony Joshua. This is an Anthony Joshua that I can get on board with, a guy who is sharing his experience, a guy who's saying, I want to be around you young guys because you're showing me what it's like to be hungry. You're showing me what it's like to grind. And we all forget it when we're in this world of sponsors, appearances, media stuff, being around family and friends. And sometimes you've got to be around people and go, oh, yeah, the grind is real. You guys are doing double sessions? Okay, I'm going to try a double session. All of that stuff. And everything I was hearing about Joshua, they're like, nah, he's looking good. He's mean. He's aggressive. He's letting his hands go again. Like, he's really looking for knockouts. And so kudos to him for that maturation, that, you know, that being that mature, older head, and, you know, and these are people whose opinions I respect, really, really respect, telling me, nah, he's a good guy. Like, they've enjoyed the experience with him. He's enjoyed being in that gym, you know, coming in, and, you know, he gets involved in the laugh and the jokes and all of that stuff when it's the right time. Yeah, and he's been more than willing to help any and everyone, so credit to him. Massive respect for that, because I can name you a lot of boxers who are just shielded off from the world. They never reintegrate into that gym culture. But some people need it. Some people are quite introverted and don't like the noise and the drama. But if you're that sort of person, never isolate yourself from the energy of those who are on their way up. So I remember after the weigh-in, there was a lot of talk on social media and in WhatsApp groups about how big Ngannou looks. I think he came in about 272 pounds and Joshua came in at, what, 252? So that's like 19 stone and some change versus 18 stone and some change. And people were nervous, like, oh my God, Ngannou's ready for war. And then I just stopped and I went, well, hold on. If ever there was a boxer who knows what it's like to come in too big and too muscled, it's Anthony Joshua. So Joshua must have looked at that scale and gone, if I can put some pace on him, he ain't doing the 10 rounds. And so people say, oh, Joshua, he looks nervous at the weigh-in. He's this, he's that. Look how small he looks compared to Ngannou. And now in my head, I was like, is boxing or MMA? Now, if you saw those two in a street fight, my money would be on Ngannou just because he's got more tools. But in boxing, Anthony Joshua's been there, man. He's iced people at 237. He's iced people at 256. He's comfortable. He knows his fighting weight. I don't think Ngannou knows his boxing weight. He doesn't know his ideal boxing weight. And we saw that. So I was looking at that weigh-in, and instead I saw a guy in Anthony Joshua who was looking at Ngannou, and Joshua's just saying, you're about to get hit harder than you've ever been hit. And he's like, your hardest punch is not harder than Vladimir Klitschko's hardest punch. And so Joshua's got that confidence that he's been to places in a boxing ring that Ngannou hasn't. And so the noise around the weigh-in, and you know how people try and make themselves important by finding edges and angles on these things. And I looked at that weigh-in and I went, nah. AJ knows he's in there with a novice. And novices get dealt with. It doesn't matter what gifts they have. Once you tame a novice, it's just a matter of when, not if. But if you're Ngannou, it gets real because suddenly you're looking up to Anthony Joshua. And I don't know if anyone's ever been in the presence of AJ. He's a big guy. He's a legit 6'6". His shoulders sit really, really high. So he doesn't have a long neck. His shoulders sit really high. He's like a taller version of Shannon Briggs because, like if you're ever around Shannon Briggs is big and he's wide. Like, they don't have massive waists, right? But they're just wide. And Joshua's like that. And Ngannou would be looking up going, oh my God, he's big and he's in shape. This is going to be hard work. Yeah. And so, I mean, you're heading into fight night, and anyone with two brain cells has AJ on an early stoppage. As soon as he lands, you imagine, you know, it's pretty much over. Because if you've never been hit that hard, man, nothing prepares you for it. Like, nothing. But when we talk about this fight, you've got a raw novice in there against a guy who's decent. Joshua's good. Now, I know we don't talk about Joshua as being an all-time great for any number of reasons. Joshua's a good heavyweight. Like, he's one of those guys who's got the attributes to be competitive in every era. He's kind of like a modern-day Ray Mercer, where you're like, wouldn't want that work. Like, I mean, special guys will deal with him, potentially, but you'd have to be special. And if you're not special, he's going to run over you. Against Ngannou, Ngannou hasn't boxed seriously. He hasn't boxed seriously, nor did he look in his approach to have actually invested in trying to learn how to box. It seems that he was just conditioning himself for a payday, and I understand that. But you can't rely on what got you through in MMA. Boxing's completely different. And here's the thing that people don't understand. Like, there's a gap between the big, strong guy who does a bit of scaffolding, goes home to his wife, you know, watches football on a Sunday. And if someone broke into his house, you know what I mean, he might have a little swing out with him, but because he's big and strong, you know, he might prevail. There's that guy. Then there's the big guy you see in your fitness gym who might hit the bag, and the bag may make an otherworldly noise. And you go, oh my God, that guy can dig. Now, the gap between these two is huge, by the way. The guy that hits the bag will smoke the guy that doesn't. Then there's a guy that invests in actually learning the elements of boxing. We might do a bit of pad work and stuff. Now, he also opens up a gap to the guy that hits the bag because he's got more dimensions. And then there's the guy that jumps in the ring to test out what he knows. Now, the gap between the guy that jumps in the ring and the guy that does the pads is bigger than the guy who does nothing versus the guy that does the pads. That's the big leap. Because now... Now it's real. Now you're going to feel pain. And then there are the guys that compete. Then there are the guys that go pro. Then there are the guys that are okay at pro. Then there are the guys that are good. Then there are the guys that are top of the table. So the guy that's top of the table in boxing is so far ahead of the guy that's a novice in boxing. Yes, you've stepped in the ring a couple of times. I don't care what people say about Ngannou's MMA career. Boxing's different. You're a raw novice in boxing. And we don't respect our professionals enough. I always go back to being a kid. One of me, being a young man. And we used to play football. Play football with a guy called Gary Parker. And this is when Gary was tail end of his career. Gary would have been late 30s, early 40s. And he's just pinging passes. He's not even running. He just says, you boys do the running. I'll find you. Ping, 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 ping. All day. Yeah? And he could kick that ball in a way that no one else could. Yeah? He could read the game in a way that no one else could. That gap between those top table guys and amateurs is huge. It's huge. I always remember, it's got to be about 2006. Lawrence Dallaglio was coming back from injury. And one of the things he liked to do was jump in with our club. Right? He'd just jump in and train. And then, because we did a lot of contact. And he wanted to just see where he was. And that's how he'd work his way up his fitness levels. And you'd see how he, you'd see how he'd play. And you realize where the gap was. You're like, this guy's elite at what he does. And it's the same with Joshua and Ngannou. Ngannou is giving Joshua openings. And Ngannou has no awareness of these openings he's giving. Because Ngannou's focused on the things that are front of mind for Ngannou are back of mind for Joshua. Footwork, positioning, you know, shifting head levels. That's all kind of autonomic for Joshua now. Because he's so experienced. Ngannou's so focused on getting those things right. Keep your hands up. Step in, step out. And he looked like a novice in there. He looked very basic because his brain is still at the phase where these things aren't automatic for him. Despite the MMA thing, this isn't automatic for him. So he hasn't even got the presence of mind to think, where am I open? He's just trying to get his act together in that ring. You saw that in the first round where he wasn't getting much joy. He was hitting fresh air because, like I said, Joshua's controlling his variables so well and Ngannou's not. And Ngannou then decides to switch to southpaw, which, you're a raw novice. What the hell are you doing? And how many times have we seen AJ drop southpaws with that straight right? And he always catches them. Always catches them down that same lane. Like, it's almost like they don't do their research into AJ. That's the one shot Joshua loves. That straight right on a southpaw. Because he knows if it gets through, it's going to put him down. So he drops him, right? First round, drops him. At that point, you're like, this is a wrap. This is not going three. Because of the way that Ngannou was like, oh my God. And that was the first time Ngannou had been hit by a proper heavyweight with power. And he went, oh my God. How do you explain that feeling? And I've felt that before, having jumped in and tried to spar pro heavyweights. Your brain struggles to process it. So what you actually do instinctively, what you want to do is you want to run around the ring and go, let me just get my act together. Give me 30 seconds. Let me get myself together because I don't know what just happened there. But you can't. You'll jump in and show you're a warrior and fight. But that sensory overload from being hit by a big man with power, it's not great. It's not pleasant. And so all those people who are going to criticize and have a go at Ngannou, I get it why you want to do that because, you know, the loser always has to take the pelters. But just understand this. If you got hit with that shot, you'd be traumatized because you'd be like, I don't understand what the hell just happened here. But Ngannou's had to process that and go, I didn't even see it. I didn't even see it coming. I didn't even expect it. That's the moment he realized he was in there. Like, it's like being an impala and in front of you is a lion. And you know your only option really is to run. And that lion's like, nowhere for you to run. You're about to get eaten. So second round. Now Ngannou's felt the power. He's twitching on everything, right? But he's twitching in the wrong way. He's not trying to create distance. He's not trying to close distance. He's just kind of there with his hands up, hoping he can sort of block it. Joshua just punched him twice, dropped him. Second one was horrible. Maybe I would have saved Ngannou after the second knockdown. And actually, I think had he stumbled and Joshua had jumped on him, it would have been stopped. So the fact that he had to take that third shot was a bit tragic, but that's boxing. Joshua did what he had to do. Oh, man. And if you think about that last knockdown, all Joshua did was indicate he was going to go to the body with the jab, and Ngannou's just gone, oh. But what Ngannou doesn't do, because he hasn't got the presence of mind or the experience, he doesn't try and create distance or position to protect himself. He just goes, oh. And then that right hand just came over, arced down, smashed the left side of his chin, and it was a wrap. People said, that shot in and of itself could have ended the fight. If that had landed in the first round, that would have been a wrap. Joshua just went right through the target. He literally threw that punch from Riyadh all the way through to Jeddah. Bang. And with that, the MMA boxing experience was over. The experiment was done. Boxing has been restored to its rightful place as potentially the hardest martial art. I respect all the other martial arts like jiu-jitsu and stuff, and they're all great. But boxing pre-selects you. You know, like when people say MMA is harder than boxing, I say, no, it's not. Because you have to be a specialist in boxing. In the same way that, who's the American guy, the grappling guy? Is it Gordon Ryan? If you look at Gordon Ryan, none of those UFC guys can go and tussle with Gordon Ryan. They can't. He'll have him kipping. Because he's a specialist in that grappling field. He is. He's a master of it. And you have to respect masters in their art. Now, MMA, it's hard to be a master in MMA because there are so many ways that you can lose. And you can't retain control of all those variables. It's very, very hard. It's very, very hard to be a specialist in all of them. So you kind of have to make your bets over where you think you'll do best. And that's kind of, them's the breaks, I guess. And Ngannou's found that out. So hopefully now the MMA thing can just go away. We don't need it in boxing anymore. I'm glad that Anthony Joshua did it in that decisive way. I wish Mayweather had done it that way. I wish Fury had done it that way. But maybe there are reasons why. I've had a theory on this for a while. And when people say, why does Fury look bad against people that Joshua looks good against? And it's the same with Mayweather. Now, I'm not talking about whether Fury's are great or not. Like, I'm not in any camp on that one. But if you look at Tyson Fury, he's so experienced and he is so skilled and he can read fights in real time so well. He doesn't have a high fear threshold, right? If Tyson fights Otto Wallin, in his head he's going to beat Wallin. It doesn't matter if it's on points or a stoppage, he's going to beat him, right? So he doesn't fight with that fear of what's going to come back, because in his head he feels he can control everything in that ring. And it was the same with Ngannou. He felt he could control everything in that ring. And because of that, he came in at that kind of wrong physical and emotional level, and Ngannou was able to exploit that. If Fury had fought with the same pressure and the same fear, and I don't mean fear as in being cowardice, I mean fear as in levels of excitement and adrenaline that Joshua did, he'd have got a similar result. Because look at what happened when Fury was scared of Wilder in the second fight. He lit him up. And then once he lit him up, he believed he was that much better than Wilder. He could be a bit more casual, and he got dropped again. So Fury needs to be super scared of something, and then he does his thing. But that where that threshold is different to where Anthony Joshua's is. You know, it always feels like Joshua's got a fight to remove the doubts within himself, and he fights like that, which is good. And seeing against Ngannou, you saw that. You saw it against Wilder, and you saw it against Helenius. He's always fighting the things that are in him. And you've got to respect that. Whereas because Fury's boxed for so long, he's got a different kind of confidence in the ring. he has confidence in his ability, whereas I think Joshua has confidence in his preparation, and they take you to different mental states when it comes to a fight. And I think that's kind of how you can explain the difference in performances where they've been common opponents. So yes, it's cheeky to say, you know, Fury's resume is getting torn fight by fight, but I don't think Fury feels the same pressure in those fights as the other people have felt. And so he doesn't take them as seriously. But when Fury zones in, I mean, he's a completely different monster. Although we don't know, we haven't seen that for a while, so maybe that's gone. One thing I do want to say, I don't think this gets said often enough, is credit to Ben Davidson. Because we're all going to talk about what happened from the first bell to the referee waving it off. Quite rightly too, because you know, that's what we're all watching. But everything up until that point is the sole accountability for Ben Davidson. Deciding what AJ focuses on, deciding how he trains, deciding who he has in camp, deciding the environment, all of this stuff is down to Ben. And he gets labeled boxer size Ben, this, that, and the other, because people don't feel he deserves what he's got. But he's still there. So credit to him for all the work he put in getting Joshua to the first bell. Does that make him an elite trainer? I don't know. It makes him good at what he does, which is getting fighters prepared to fight. Now, you know, we've talked about this before. He still has to build one from scratch, and we're going to see how that journey goes, and that's going to be interesting. But in this lane of his, you know, that whole, we're going to base what we do off of analysis, cool. I mean, he's done it. The results have been mixed. I think you always look like a tactical genius when your guys have knockout power. That's the reality of it. Speaking as a fellow coach, albeit in a different context, for me, I look to Ben to see what he does with guys like Chris Congo, Jamie TKV, McCormack. That's what I watch, because I want to see what he's imparting to them that we can't attribute to another professional coach. But he's had a great Saturday, and when those guys come home, hopefully they give him the pat on the back he deserves, because it's a hard job. So credit where credit's due. I just wanted to make sure I got that in there, because a lot of times, you know, he gets marginalized when Joshua wins, because nah, Joshua's supposed to win. But you got to put Joshua in position to do that, and he did that. So congratulations to him. What else happened in the aftermath of it? I feel the only right-minded person in the whole of the boxing media was David Haye when he was asked about the fight. And David said Joshua did what he was supposed to do. And when David says that, I believe him, because I genuinely think David would have iced him as well. Don't know how long it would have taken David, but David would have iced him, because the punches that Joshua was throwing are the shots David throws. And David's accurate and he's fast. Added the mobility too. And it was good to see David. Like, David's become like the new Carl Froch in that he just says it like it is. And it was right. Joshua did what he was supposed to do. You know, performance was spot on. But we can't be here talking about Ngannou like he was going to be this big monster. That's not fair on Ngannou. It puts too much expectation on him. He's a guy who's made enough money to take care of his family. And if he decides to never fight again, mate, he's had a great career. Contrast that with Eddie Hearn, who were back, baby, all of this sort of stuff, after beating Ngannou. And what I love about Hearn is Hearn has no notion of what he said about Ngannou prior, and he doesn't care. It's kind of funny in that sense, because he was very scathing about Francis Ngannou before. Very, very scathing until Joshua had to fight him. Then all of a sudden, you know, he was a big, scary monster. But it's good to have those guys back. But I think when Joshua's up and Hearn's up, everything's up in boxing. The money's up, the numbers are up, the eyes on screen are up. You know, this fight connected with so many people. I just look at my WhatsApp. They're the sort of people I don't normally talk boxing with, and they're all in the game. So I'm happy for all of that. I think it's been fantastic. I'm not sold on the Saudi concept, I'm not going to lie. Atmosphere was dead. It didn't... For how big a moment that was in this country, it didn't feel what we saw on screen was befitting. It was tame. You see how they have the whole thing just dark, so you can't see how sparse it was. I was talking to guys who were there. Like, a lot of stuff was comped, not well attended. Not great. And yes, this is helping these boxers' bank balance, but who's going to replay these Saudi fights? you're not, because there's no crowd and you don't feed off of that. And I think that's a big part of it for me, that, you know, the crowd reaction, you know, I don't know. I don't think the Saudi thing's working at the moment. They may find a solution to that, by the way, but at the moment, nah, it doesn't really do it for me. But people are getting paid, so the long, until we find a new source of money that people can travel in and out of, I don't think we're going to have anything different than what we've got now. But I'm going to maintain this question. Like, so if you now look at that kind of top table of guys who've kind of been around that scene for a little while now, Fury, Joshua, Usyk, Wilder, at some point these guys have to fight the new breed, because we don't know who we're supposed to be getting behind now. You know, Jared Anderson, in the time that he's waiting to fight for a title, he's going to pieces. Do we need to put Dubois in this mix? You know, so ask those questions. What would Dubois have done against that Joshua? I don't know if he would have beaten him. Might have done. Don't know. Be interesting to see Don Charles in the corner against Anthony Joshua. You know, does Joe Joyce have a route back if he beats Cash Alley, which by no means guaranteed? All of these things are sort of compelling. And then at some point, I think we find out about the 5v5. But it's worth just, let me just sort of blast through the rest of the fights that I saw. I didn't watch all of them. I'm tired of people going, whoa, why did you watch this fight? Just shut up. I mean, I watch what I want. First of all, unlucky to Jack McGann. Like, I know Jack through Alfie Warren, and unlucky. Ah, man, what a way. Like, you know, credit to Louis Green. What a punch to end the fight with, man. Just a dip and a right hand over the top. Until British boxers learn to move their heads and their feet, and then until British boxers have situational awareness to know, like, when you're in the corner, you're in a very bad place. This is what's going to happen. I've been saying this, like, promoters are allowing people to train their fighters that I wouldn't have confidence in. You know? I put it out there. I want to put it in the ether now. If they've got this Box Nation thing and they're dying for content, get five trainers round a table, get your cameras. I want to be one of them. And let's start exposing the hoaxes, the guys who don't know what they're talking about, the guys who don't invest in preparation, the guys who don't really do much more than they were taught, the guys who aren't trying to grow their skill set. Let's do that. I'm always down for stuff like that. But poor Jack McGann, hopefully he comes back. You know, he's a young guy, and I let him do his thing. Got to talk about Parker Zhang. People were just moaning that Zhang doesn't move. Look, I'm going to tell you this now. Like, Zhile Zhang's what, 40? Or he's close to 40? He knows everything you're tweeting. He knows everything you're saying. He knows everything that Macklin's saying. Bear in mind, he's only a couple of years younger than Matthew Macklin. Put Matthew Macklin in the boxing ring and see what he does. And Macklin will come out and he'll go, I could see everything. My body just didn't respond. One of the curses of getting old, on God, I promise to God, one of the curses of getting old is you can see it, you can't act on it. On God. It frustrates me. When my mates say, why don't you spar anymore? I say, do you know what? Every time I spar, I can feel what I'm not anymore. I can see who I was, and I can see who I am now, and that gap's hurtful. Because you end up getting hit with shots you never used to get hit with. Zhang's going through that same thing. If Zhang didn't have power, he'd have retired by now. Imagine you're Zhile Zhang, you're 40, you drop the guy twice and you can't win. And you can't win not because you can't put your foot on the accelerator. You're waiting for openings that you trust, and Parker's not giving those to you. Parker's like, I'm a younger, fresher guy, and I'm going to show you that. And credit to Joseph Parker. You look at Parker's CV, he's becoming the new Derek Chisora in many ways, isn't he? He's like the new Derek. You're a guy that you can put in there and he'll just give you a competitive fight. That's the new Derek. But yeah, I felt for Zhang because I'm watching the fight and I can see the openings. I'm like, nah, Zhang can see them too. He just can't trigger. Yeah, that. Even if it's 0.15 of a second, that little difference is noticeable at that level. And he would have felt that. And the thing is, because of the age he is, he can't just be reckless trying to bomb in there and swing wildly, because that will get him hurt. So now, I felt for Zhang. I think what we've realized with Zhilei Zhang is he's got to be put in with the right guy. I don't know if we're going to be calling this an Andy Lee masterclass. I just, that raiding, shoe shining sort of style, it doesn't do much for me, but it got Parker the win. And you have to always respect the guy that wins. And he came off the canvas twice to grind out that win. So huge credit to Joseph Parker. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that thing that when people go, why wasn't Zhang working? He wanted to. He just couldn't connect the openings. Like, what he would have needed was Parker to really telegraph what they were. And then he would have been all right. You know, I did say it. When Parker was folding on the inside, I was like, you can't be dipping and folding on the inside against Zhang. He's just going to ping you. And he did. Dropped him twice. But let's just, can I say one thing about Zhang? And I hope Moses Atalma watches Zhang. Because Zhang shows you how to be a big southpaw. Economy of movement, just knew the right move to make. Just slide your back leg out a little bit. Come back with your work. All those things that he does, they're elegant. And I kind of wish we weren't looking at him in his 40s. I wish this version of Zhang was 32 years old. And I'd love to see what he would have done. You know, with a bit more zip, pep, and mobility. God, Jesus, man. Everything he does is sound, and it's nice, and it's clean. And, you know, Parker was hitting a lot of forearm and glove. Like, I enjoy watching Zhilei Zhang. I think how he boxes as a southpaw heavyweight, a lot of people can learn from. What's the other fight we need to talk about? Nick Ball. I've got a hard time for saying this. Now, I didn't say anything other than I'm not sure if I'm unhappy with this result, right? And I wasn't, because I sat there and I went, and if you really understand high-level boxing, if you understand what judges are looking at and looking for, if you really understand these things, you'll know that Ray Vargas, for a large part of that fight, was playing with Nick Ball. He had Nick Ball falling over himself, falling into the ropes, all of that stuff. Judges reward that because that's ring control. They're going to ring generalship, as smart asses like to say. But he had control of that ring. You saw him. He'd take a couple of steps back. He'd bait Ball into rushing in and then just sort of pivot out. All of that stuff counts in the final score. Nick Ball had one approach. Rushing with haymakers. And like, I don't like seeing that because, number one, you become reckless with your head. And number two, it's not elite. Think about what we're trying to say when we've got world champions. We're trying to say this is the high point of the sport. You tell me something in Nick Ball's arsenal that's the high point of the sport. And I'm not saying whether he's a good or a bad fighter. What I'm saying is what I saw last night was a guy who thought he could just overpower someone. The paradox is the things that people criticize Conor Benn for style-wise are the things people are praising Nick Ball for. The same people. Make it make sense. Nick Ball needs more intelligence to his game. There's no question about that. He's not going to be a world champion that holds his belt for a long time if he doesn't sharpen up. I'd like to see him sharpen up. And people say, oh, you're upset because he beat your mate Isaac. Yeah. I'm upset. Of course I'm upset for Isaac. But the reality is, Isaac was brought over for a job and Isaac did his job. With Nick Ball, I'm looking at that going, you're at 126 pounds. You're going to be jumping in with guys like Mauricio Lara. You ain't going to be able to rush in with your hands low and your chin in the air, reaching up and stuff. And you ain't going to be able to do that against guys like Lopez. You know, you're just not. Like, these are not Isaac Lowe. And that's on Nick. If Nick wants to get better, he's got to take control of his career. I'm not saying that his career at the top is done. I'm just saying, based on what I saw in Riyadh, I wasn't impressed. Yeah? I've heard people say stuff like, yeah, he looked poor, but he did enough to win. I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, you can't look poor and do enough to win. That's why we have judges. Judges are like, are you good enough to win? I don't believe he was. I think if Ray Vargas had held it together a bit more in the last two rounds, it would be hard to say he didn't win. But he had Nick Ball befuddled and confused, and he was toying with him for large parts of that. I've also got some sympathy with definitely the second knockdown, because there were parts of that ring where even when Vargas wasn't under attack, he seemed to be snagging his boot on the canvas or there was something where he wasn't able to just slide across. And it looks like that might have happened on one of the knockdowns. I don't know if it was like a canvas issue, and this is what happens when you do these shows in other places. But there was definitely something iffy about the second one. But like I said, I can't tell you whether Nick deserved to win. I can't tell you whether Nick didn't deserve to win. I'm just saying I wasn't upset with the result. Now, if you were upset about the result and you were there crying on social media, get yourself a loving family, man. Like, there's more important things to life than, you know, throwing your toys out the pram because someone else lost a fight that you're not getting paid for. You don't get to wear the belt. But, you know, I guess that's got me banned from Liverpool again. I can never win, can I? Anything else I need to say? Nah. I think I'm done. You know, Adam Catron and that lot, and True Geordie, they'll tell you the rest that you need to know. But I'm going to tap out and enjoy the rest of my weekend. I hope you guys enjoyed it. As always, let's keep this discussion going. I'll summarize by saying, if this is the new Anthony Joshua we've got, I'm happy with this version of Anthony Joshua. I wish this had been Anthony Joshua from the start. But then, you know, if we knew then what we know now, our lives would be completely different. So let's just enjoy what we have while we have it. It's good to have AJ back at the top table, definitely on a commercial basis, if not necessarily in terms of rankings. It was good to have him up there. And, you know, let's hope that he keeps entertaining. Yeah, take care, guys. Have a great weekend.